I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are so happy to be joined today by a wonderful member of our team, Dr. Katie Rowley, our medical director. We're here to talk just a brief chat, really, today about something that Dr. Rowley actually suggested we talk about because of the conversations that she's had with some clients or the things that we just see come up sometimes. And people who are curious are still learning about homeopathy. And that's toxic remedies. So welcome today, Dr. Rowley. We're so happy to have you.
Well, I'm really excited to talk about this because I think, what's the metaphor? Like trying to practice homeopathy without your quote toxic remedies is like trying to practice, do something with your hands tied behind your back, right? Like you, a fundamental paradigm shift, I think, that you have to have in your thinking about it because we need to talk about the philosophy of homeopathy first, which I know you guys have discussed endlessly at many different episodes, which you can look back to review. But if you essentially, the way that homeopathy works is you have to give a remedy that the person would be susceptible to the effects of that remedy. And so let's pretend that it's asthma. I don't believe that you're going to be able to choose any remedy that could ever help asthma if it's not a remedy that could potentially be toxic to the respiratory system, mm-hmm. right? Like it has to be able to create those symptoms in that system in order to be able to remove those symptoms in that system. So right. any time that you have severe symptoms, you're going to need a remedy that sounds toxic or scary. And so it's sort of a thing that you have to get, I don't want to say get over, but you have to change your mindset around.
Well, I think that we need to remember that with homeopathy, we are using very, very, very dilute doses. So even if you couldn't wrap your head around the possibility that you would need to give something that could be toxic to the system that you're trying to get solutions for, even if you can't wrap your head around that, like the dose that you're given in a homeopathic remedy is so small that it's nanoparticles at most that are left in anything that we would recommend, at least at Resilience Naturopathic. And so like the truth of the matter is you would have to take like an ocean's worth of the remedy for it to actually have toxic amounts. Like you would have to consume more than would be possible to consume in a day in order, or even in an hour to be even remotely toxic. If you like, it's just not possible. And when Samuel Hahnemann was first like discovering this whole law of similars, that homeopathy is like the central point of homeopathy, it was at a time when we were using these things that we understand to be toxic in full doses to just treat everything, you know? And so the point of part of this is because he stopped practicing medicine because of the toxicity. So the whole fact of the matter is like the system of homeopathy came about because of the desire to provide non-toxic solutions for people too. Yeah.
So I think that it's, and I understand it, right? Like I understand if you're new to it and your doctor, your provider tells you that they're going to recommend a remedy like Belladonna, right? Parents will mm-hmm. say, well, here's my concern, right? My concern is that that's a very sedating remedy. And I'm very worried because whenever we've given sedatives, my child has had a paradoxical effect, right? And so we have to understand that we're giving such a small, it's not apples to apples, right? We're giving such an incredibly small amount that it's just, you don't see that primary effect. So you're not going to get the same thing. You're going to get the opposite. That's what we're going for, is we're going for the body's reaction against what we give. So we're giving the tiniest amount, but any remedy that could possibly help that child's symptoms, you're going to have that same concern about because it has to match those symptoms. It has to have that effect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you bring up that people would say that they don't want to give something that in like full dose would be sedating because they've had a paradoxical effect to sedatives in the past, which I'm just like, okay, so that's even more of an argument that you might need this particular remedy because it sounds like you might have had a homeopathic reaction to something in the past because, you know, homeopathy is not just about, it's about the dose, right? Like the dose is just is like a secondary thing. It's about the application of the law of similars. And so it's just interesting that you brought that example up specifically.
It's hard for us as parents, though, because it's such a shift, right? Because if we react, so I'll give myself as an example. As a child, super, super allergic to poison ivy, in the ER with poison ivy in my throat and my lungs, and like really just super, super dangerous situation, always been terrible. And whenever you, Dr. Barr, told me that I don't know if it was my first or second remedy was going to be Rustox, I was like, she's lost her mind.
Because it's made from poison ivy.
Yes. Yes. And so part of me was like, okay, well, if this, what she's talking about, you know, the like thing, then this will make sense. But also I'm terrified because I don't understand how homeopathy is different than if I gave my kid an antibiotic and they reacted to the antibiotic, I wouldn't want to give the antibiotic again. But homeopathy works just in a different way. And we don't understand that when we first get going.
Right. Right. It's a small, like very, very small dose so that we're trying to avoid that primary action, which is the biochemical force of the substance on the body, and only provoke the secondary healing response, which is the equal but opposite response. Right. And in this case, really, truly with homeopathy, I always say equal but opposite just because that's how we say it in our vernacular. But it's not really equal. Right. It's a powerful, it's a more, a greater than response than what is being introduced, but still opposite. Right. And so that's really what we're provoking. Dr. Rowley, like since this was something that you brought to us and it really said, OK, I think this is something we should talk about. Was there anything else that you were thinking that you wanted to talk about before we maybe even go into some examples of the remedies that are maybe a little bit more that we've heard of that have been a little bit more concerning? Or do you not? Was that even not in your thought process?
No. Well, we certainly can. I think that we covered it, though. So the two main things that I want people to understand when I have this conversation are that there is such little amount of nanoparticles left that this can't possibly have the effect that you would read in a toxicology report.
Yeah.
Right. Like that it's not possible to happen. You could be anaphylactically allergic to poison ivy and take Rustox 200C, 1M, 30C and not have an allergic anaphylactic response to it because there's no molecules of it in there is, I think, really important to understand. And then the second thing is that it's because parents will say, well, I'm nervous to start with that one. Can we choose a different one? And I always try to explain that you're going to have the same concern about any remedy that could possibly help these symptoms, because in order to help these symptoms, it has to cause these symptoms in a poisonous dose, in a high dose.
And even the things that feel like it's like a nothing, like natrum muriaticum, right? Like, oh, that's just table salt. It's nothing to be concerned about. But, you know, like you can have some really bad things if your sodium happens to go out of balance. It's not just blood pressure that can be affected. If your sodium is too high or you have toxic levels of sodium, there's some bad things that can happen. So including things like, you know, seizures and like all sorts of, you know, like consciousness issues, like really, really big things. So that is a really important thing. And the reality is too, especially like it's also true that like what you're saying help is likely to have some level of like concerning toxicity that you could read or that you could find. If it has any chance of helping with the symptoms, it's also not likely that you're going to see benefit. If you're like, I'm not comfortable with that one, can we try a different one? Because it works differently in the body, right? So I have had like some clients that wasted literally years because they did not want to take the one remedy that was indicated because they were scared of that particular remedy, refused to take it. I can't force anybody to take something. I did my best to accommodate, telling them every time, like, we can try this one. There's some similarity. There's some overlap. So perhaps we might see some improvement, but we're not likely to see the same results that I expect with this particular remedy that you don't want to take. can't force you to take it. If you would like to try this one, we can, but you need you to understand that it's not likely to have the same results. And if anything we do see from it is probably going to be either less than we would expect, less than you want, or palliative, because it's not really truly the best match. So that can be just like a really important thing to consider. Like, it is safe. And even if it feels scary, are you potentially delaying progress for your case because of your concern with this remedy? I've had some people who had some concerns and didn't delay, and we found a way to help tiptoe into it that would make mom feel more comfortable. And then mom ended up, one mom I'm thinking of in particular, the remedy happens to be tarantula. Mom was really thrown off when I said, your first remedy for your child is going to be tarantula. Then she didn't give it until at first. Then I said, how about we do one dose and you can see what happens with one dose? And she was like, okay, after we talked through everything again, said all the stuff we're saying today, she gave one dose and she's like, huh, my kid's actually better. And I didn't even think she was bad, but she's better. And I was like, okay, safe to give. And so I was like, if you're not comfortable doing a daily dose, I think a daily dose, because there's no aggravation, I think a daily dose would be a really useful thing to get us further along. She wasn't comfortable with that. So we just did as needed dosing. But guess who gave multiple doses in a row anytime she did as needed dosing, because it was safe and effective and helped her kiddo. So yeah, it was not you, Jody.
I know, but you had that same conversation with me, because I was like, but I feel like there's two different groups of like thought here. There's me who is like, okay, I see what homeopathy is doing. I will give a remedy from a scab off of a goat's ball. If that's like, we get to keep doing this, like, sorry, it's really gross, but like, I will, like, there's nothing that scares me, because there is no way that what I'm seeing is happening any other way. And let's keep doing this. And we had done it long enough that I'm like, okay, we're good. I got it. I'm fine, whatever it is. And then there's my husband, who is a little bit more kind of medically minded. And he's like, mm-hmm. Okay, you're saying it's not toxic. And I understand we're giving one dose and that's not harming her. But what does it look like if we're giving her arsenicum over a very long period of time? Mm-hmm. And he needs his research. He needs his data, which at the time I didn't understand how to find any research. I understand that there's research out there. But I think what got him over that was a conversation with you. But I had to tell him, stop looking on the internet. Like, we're not going to find good information about this on the internet. Mm-hmm. Find negative information on the internet. And there's lots of different reasons why it's that way. But I'm like, if you need to talk about, I think you even suggested it, Dr. Barr, just have him talk to me and ask some questions. And mm-hmm. that was kind of the validation that he needed. And we did give the arsenicum a whole lot. And everything was perfectly fine. It's just harder for some people. I know his brain works very differently than mine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really up until the very end, he had concerns about that.
Well, like I said earlier, like, I'd have to find the exact amount. And I don't even know that I can. And I think that there's somebody who's better with math. Maybe AI somewhere can figure this out for us. But the amount that you would have to take to even reach a toxic dose is just not possible, right? It's just not possible to take that, like, take so much that you could reach a toxic dose. I can't help but think about, like, some of the negative things you might see on the internet. There was a group of skeptics, and I believe it was in England, that was trying to prove that homeopathy does nothing, and they took a whole bunch of belladonna, which is a very toxic plant. And they're like, see, it did nothing. And the point is not that it did nothing, because it was not the correct remedy for them. Like, they didn't all have their case taken and then be told belladonna was the remedy and like have nothing. Like, they were basically trying to prove it's not toxic, and they succeeded, except they were trying to say its non-toxicity was the reason it would never work. And so it was a very different thing that they were arguing, right? And so, was there any other points that you wanted to make before we just chatted about a couple of the remedies and that people... Yeah, so the ones that to me have come up the most have been some of the more toxic plants that people will look up. So things like Nux Vomica, which is a very common remedy, really, that we see can be useful for so many things beyond Pan's Pandas, but we've used it in so many of our Pan's Pandas kids and seen really great success. It has, if the plant itself has some strychnine in it, so does Ignatia, which how many Panda's moms would not have recovered and been able to like move on past Pan's PTSD without Ignatia, right? Belladonna is one we've mentioned. And then there's other nightshade remedies that are the nightshade family of plants can have a tendency to be toxic, but also hallucinogenic. And so things like stramonium and hyoscyamus, and those are like the two big ones that really jump out that people will sometimes say, oh my gosh, if I give my kid this, is it going to cause hallucinations? Is it going to cause some of this like intense behavior that that I am seeing written about this remedy? No, because it's a tiny dose. It doesn't have enough to cause a biochemical force on the body where it's making it do something that the body's not already doing. What it does is it gives a little bit of a similar action to what the body's experiencing. And even if it's not hallucinations, if it's tics, which is another thing that both of those remedies can produce, then it's, if it's similar enough, then it can just be enough of a nudge that the body pushes back in the opposite way, right? So you're not going to see that. Heavy metals. There are heavy metals that are used as homeopathic remedies. Mercury is another one that's really helpful in Pan's Pandas, especially if teeth are like one of your biggest issues. Oh my gosh, we would not survive like really bad teeth issues and like dental issues as a factor in Pan's Pandas without mercury, you know, mercurius. So arsenicum, Jody, you mentioned it, is another one for, you know, is really, really helpful. There's so many, like even like, you know, lead. Lead is a remedy not as commonly used in Pan's Pandas, but absolutely a useful remedy that if we didn't have in our toolkit, we wouldn't have the same success that we do. So there's other medicines, or, you know, homeopathic medicines, just lots of things. Ultimately, as Dr. Rowley said at the very beginning, we would not be able to have success with homeopathy were we not able to use things that, if taken in a stronger dose, could be toxic, but taken in a homeopathic dose have that like hormetic effect, is I think I'm saying it right, the hormesis, where it's just like enough of an agitant to the body to get that opposite healing response from the body itself that makes it really safe. And so like the truth of the matter, like it's always so funny to me is that like to wrap up this conversation, and Jody, like you can chime in whatever you need to from your mom's perspective here too, but it's always so interesting to me that people will come to us having like removed parts of their body or taken IV blood products and chemotherapy agents that have destroyed on purpose a part of their immune system. And then they're worried about taking a homeopathic remedy that has some toxic reports online. It's just always so interesting to me because the homeopathic remedies are substantially safer than a lot of the things that are being recommended for Pan's Pandas.
Yeah, they are substantially safer. That's been studied. We just don't know because we don't hear about it. Yeah. And I can't help but think, like, going back to one of the remedies we talked about a second ago, my younger daughter had her little form of rages for years and years. And I can't help but think, like, how many families understood that that one remedy, and she was on it for a very short amount of time, never saw another rage. That's been years and years and years ago. And that was the safest form of medicine that I could have possibly been giving her. And it completely took away that symptom, like gone, never seen again. Anyways, we don't know homeopathy. We don't understand homeopathy, but it's safe. And I also tell families, like, nobody loves you and your Pan's kid more than resilience. Like, we're all Pan's people, and there is no way in heck we're going to give something that we might think is dangerous to a child. Like, we're here to help you heal.
Yeah. Anyways. Well, and on that note, let's lean in to the possibility that a toxic remedy might be recommended and that it might be the turning point to actually help your family heal. All right. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Rowley, and for suggesting this really important topic that we talk about, like in our Facebook group, we talk about and we help people through, but it's important to have it out there in the world for people who need to hear it as a whole. So, all right. We'll talk to you guys soon. Take care, guys.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.